All right, we're in chapter 2. Do we want to pick up, or do we want to start in 3? Thought we had a little bit left in 2, but I wasn't sure.
I felt like we just got a few verses into it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Why don't we start with verse number 6 then in chapter 2? And see if we have anything we want to talk about. Let's just finish the chapter. Dave Scott, can you read?
Talking about the day of the Lord, you have abandoned your people.
Yep.
You have abandoned your people, the house of Jacob. They are full of superstitions from the east. They practice divinations like the Philistines and clasp hands like the pagans. The land is full of silver and gold. There is no end to their treasures. Their land is full of horses. There is no end to their chariots. Their land is full of idols. They bow down to the work of their hands so that their fingers have made. So man will be brought low and mankind humbled. Do not forgive them. Go into the rocks, hide in the ground from the dead of the Lord and the splendor of his majesty. The eyes of the arrogant man will be humbled. Pride of men brought low. Lord alone will be exalted in that day. The Lord Almighty has a day in store for all the proud and lofty, and all that is exalted, and they will be humbled. For all the cedars of Lebanon, tall and lofty, and all the oaks of Bashan, for all the towering mountains and all the high hills, for every lofty tower and every fortified wall, for every trading ship and every stately vessel, the arrogance of man will be brought low, and the pride of men humbled. The Lord alone will be exalted in that day, and the idols will totally disappear. Men will flee to caves and rocks, and no holes in the ground from the dead of the Lord, and the splendors of his majesty when he rises to shake the earth. In that day, men will throw away the rodents and bats, their idols of silver and idols of gold, which they make to worship. They will flee to caverns in the rocks, to the overhanging crags, from the dread of the Lord, and the splendor of his majesty when he rises to shake the earth. Stop trusting in man, who has but a breath in his nostrils. Well, what accounts is he?
All right, that's good. What translation is that, Dave?
Sorry?
What translation is that?
NIV.
Okay.
Except where I change words, you know. It's
wow. Verse 6 in the ESV says the day of the Lord. Does anyone else have a label?
What's the title?
Heading? What's that?
The title of this section was Day of the Lord.
Day of the Lord, okay.
The
mm-hmm.
ESV does not have one.
Does not have a title.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's verse 7 and 8. Verse 7 describes such an abundance of riches. You know, even horses were considered a sign of wealth. And they have such... Israel has gotten to a point where they have so many blessings and so many riches that it turns into idol worship. And I was writing, there always seems to be this connection between a point in which people become so blessed with an abundance that they forget God and then create a reliance on those riches and create idols. And I know here it would have been like statues and things of that nature, but I like in our society, you know, what is it with us? You know, vehicles, TVs, houses, and all of our possessions become more important than God himself. And God always promises to take the haughty and bring them down. There's almost like this question of who is righteous enough to be trusted with riches?
Yeah, their land is filled with silver and gold, and there is no end to their treasures. Their land is filled with horses, and there is no end to their chariots. And then there's the relationship there with idols.
Yeah.
But there's also perhaps a connection between us being plenty of foreigners.
Sure. Yeah, verse number 6. You rejected your people, the house of Jacob, because they are full of things from the east, fortune tellers like the Philistines. They strike their hands, they strike hands with the children of foreigners. So three different descriptions right there. Everything east, fortune tellers, and children of foreigners. What is the significance of that?
Perhaps they were willing to compromise to a certain extent to gain wealth. But they were not always considered righteous themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They were making alliances with other nations for military protection.
Yeah, and you mentioned that before in Ezekiel. So it's a very common thing for that.
But maybe it wasn't even for military purposes, protection. It was maybe just to enjoy all the benefits that other nations would have, all the good things.
Trading alliances. Trading alliances, for example. Yeah.
We definitely see it with Solomon.
Sure. So in verse 10, enter into the rock and hide in the dust. What is that? What is that language? How should I understand that?
Revelation 6:15.
I was going to say it sounded a lot like they make the rocks to fall on them.
But that's also verse 19 of the same passage. Just mentioned more than once.
Yeah.
And finally.
Like for me, number 10, he's telling them to hide, and then 19, they will end up hiding. So as if like they listen to him this morning. So it says enter into the rock as if saying, hey, there's no way to escape God. You can just go do that, but at the same time, you're not going to escape God. And then they will end up being in terror, especially with the shaking of the earth. And it says that the glory of God will be in their presence, so they'll be hiding.
He uses that same line, the terror of the Lord and the glory of his majesty, like three different times here.
Well, it's a reminder of Exodus when God tells Moses to hide in the cave because his glory is going to pass, but it's, the context is very different there.
And then 1 Kings, he tells Elisha to hide in the cave as well. Because otherwise he'd be blinded.
Anybody see anything else of significance? How about verse number 12? What is meant by, for the Yahweh of hosts has a day. What is that referring to? For the Lord of hosts has a day. What are some of the other renderings? What else do y'all have?
NLT says a day of reckoning.
A day of reckoning. So they're adding that to bring clarity. Okay.
Which one is 12 verse 12?
12, yeah. Open sentence of 12.
Mine says, for the day of the Lord of hosts.
Yeah, for the day of the Lord of hosts. Okay.
NSB is also reckoning.
Includes reckoning, does it have like a footnote or something, or is it just...
No, in the verse, for the Lord of hosts will have a day of reckoning against everyone who's proud and lofty.
Hmm. It's interesting. And it doesn't have a footnote next to the word reckoning. It's
no, but I have a very simple.
Okay. Italicized.
Oh, it's italicized. Yeah, okay, so that indicates that it's not in the Hebrew, that it's there for additional clarification. Yep. I know the NLT is going to do that because the NLT is very comfortable providing the clarity.
Well, the net talks about the dreadful judgment of the Lord.
Right. Yeah, which is the idea of the Lord has a day. Yeah, this is a day of judgment that has been already fixed by God. And it is interesting that the first thing that's lifted up is proud and lofty. Against all that is lifted up, it shall be brought low. Cedars of Lebanon, lofty and lifted up. Oaks, lofty mountains, uplifted hills, every high tower, every fortified wall. So what is all of that collectively?
Destruction.
Symbols of power.
What's that?
Symbols of power.
Right, symbols of power. Right, symbols of power. And, I mean, proud and lofty, against all that's lifted up, it shall be brought low. Against cedars of Lebanon, lofty, lifted up. Oaks of Bashan, against all the lofty mountains, against the uplifted hills, against every high tower, against every fortified wall. So what is that? What's that language communicating?
Again, all the things that they're trusting in for their security.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
Everything they made for show that they had power.
You want the city that's resting up in the mountains that's protected.
Yeah, verse 6.
All the ships in Tarshish.
Yeah, against all the ships. What do the ships represent?
Power of trade and also
armor. Yeah, right. A false sense of security through sea power. Mm-hmm. Against all the beautiful craft. And then look how he circles back. Against the haughtiness of man shall be humbled. The lofty pride of men shall be brought low. The Lord alone will be exalted in that day. The idols shall utterly pass away. People shall enter the caves of the rocks, the holes of the ground, from before the terror of the Lord, from the splendor of his majesty, when he rises to terrify the earth. So this writing style that we're seeing, how would you describe it? How would you describe this writing style? Come on, grab some words. How would you describe this writing style?
It's very poetic.
All right, yes. Number one, it's poetic. What else?
Definitive.
Okay, definitive. How about repetitive?
Mm-hmm.
Right, what's the point of the repetitive nature of the text? To drive it home.
It's important.
What else is it? Is it symbolic in nature?
Yes.
It's all metaphoric, right? So these are important points to identify in correctly learning to interpret the text. I'm looking for what is the symbol behind this. I'm looking for the message behind this. I'm looking for the degree to which he will repeat himself. So if we go back to the beginning of the chapter and we just look at what's our first reference to pride? What's our first reference to anything like that? Is it anything 1 through 6 or is it... Okay, how about it shall be established as the highest mountains? Okay. What else? Where else are we at?
Verse 9.
Okay. Man is humbled, each one is brought low. Do not forgive them. Enter into the rocks, the dust, the splendor. Verse 11, the haughty looks. Verse 11, lofty pride. Verse 12, proud and lofty. Lifted up again, brought low. Jack already talked about against. We have five of them in a row, and then we circle back to the haughtiness of man shall be humbled. Lofty pride of men shall be brought low. The Lord alone will be exalted in that day. And then notice verse 18. We're circling back again because look back at verse 8. Their land is filled with idols, verse 18, and the idols shall utterly pass away. Verse 20, idols of silver, idols of gold.
So maybe their power has become their idols. So he's destroying all of them.
Pass away is very symbolic because they're made of non-perishable material. Mm-hmm.
How should I understand verse number 22?
Trust God, not man, because he's mortal.
So what do we think, in what sense were they trusting man?
Well, like Chris said, they have all these alliances. They've had these political marriages in Solomon. We know that they're going to have a definitive leaning by the time Jeremiah comes around towards Egypt to be a countermeasure against Babylon. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be truly looking at how can we form these alliances, how can we hold our own military strength, how can we use our riches to our advantage. And the fact of the matter is we are incredibly frail creatures compared to God. And not only that, but our life is like a mist. It appears and it vanishes against the eternality of God and his eternal judgments.
I got a footnote that takes me over to Psalms 146, 3 and 4. Put not your trust in princes, nor in the Son of Man, in whom there is no help. His breath goeth forth, he returneth to his earth, and that very day his thoughts perish.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yep. Yeah. I mean, we're getting verse number 22 is a significant indictment as to the morality, the mortality of every human.
I think verse 22 also points back to creation. Mm-hmm. With the
absolutely,
it's like a reminder that he made them all in the first place.
That's right, absolutely. In whose nostrils is breath? For of what account is he? Because what was he prior to the breath being in dust? Dust. Yeah. So apart from that, nothing. Nothing. So why are we trusting in these humans? Which is kind of the segue into chapter 3. Someone else start reading chapter 3 and let's see what the next nice stopping point is. I don't know where they were going, so when you get tired, just stop.
For behold, the Lord of hosts, takes away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stock and the store, the whole supply of bread and the whole supply of water, the mighty man and the man of war, the judge and the prophet, and the diviner and the elder, the captain of 50 and the honorable man, the counselor and the skillful artisan, and the expert enchanter. I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. The people will be oppressed, every one by another, and every one by his neighbor. The child will be insolent toward the elder, and the base towards the honorable. When a man takes a hold of his brother in the house of his father, saying, "You have clothing, you be our ruler, and let these runes be under your power." In that day, he will protest, saying, "I cannot cure your ills, for in my house is neither food nor clothing. Do not make me a ruler of the people." For Jerusalem stumbled, and Judah is fallen, because their tongue and their doings are against the Lord, to provoke the eyes of his glory. They look on their countenance, witness against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom. They do not hide it. Woe to their soul, for they have brought evil upon themselves. Say to the righteous that it shall be well with them, for they shall eat the fruit of their doings. Woe to the wicked, it shall be ill with them, with him, for the reward of his hands shall be given him. As for my people, children are the oppressor, and women rule over them. O my people, those who lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths. The Lord stands up to plead and stands to judge the people. The Lord will enter into the judgment with the elders of his people and his princes. For you have eaten up the vineyard. The plunder of the poor is in your house, in your houses. What do you mean by crushing my people and grinding the faces of the poor, says the Lord, God of hosts.
All right, that's a good stopping point. Let's just pause there and take a breath. Okay. So let's go back and start unpacking the metaphors, the symbolic language, so that we get a better understanding of what's being communicated. So in verse number one, what's the first thing that's being addressed?
God's sovereignty.
All right, for behold, the Lord God of hosts is taking away from Jerusalem and for Judah. So we see God's sovereignty in what sense, Caleb?
In the NET version it says, look, the sovereign Lord of heaven's armies is about to remove from Jerusalem and Judah every source of security.
Yeah, I noticed that. I thought when Sean read it, it was Lord, Lord. I think there were two. It was a double reference to Lord. Yeah.
For behold, the Lord of hosts.
Right. And then the NET Bible uses the word sovereign, right?
Sovereign Lord of heaven's armies.
The sovereign Lord of heaven's armies. Okay. In the ESV, who has an ESV besides me? Okay. Did you notice that the first Lord is not Yahweh there?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then God is also different. Did you notice how God is? Yeah. All of it's capitalized. So what was the two parallels, Caleb, that you had there?
The NET actually has Lord as Yahweh. And it just says, look, the sovereign Lord of heaven's armies.
And how are they doing the Lord there, Caleb?
It's Yahweh.
Oh, it says Yahweh.
All caps. Okay.
Yeah, if I look at the Strong's, it says, if I'm reading it from New King James, it would say, for behold, Adonai, the Yahweh of hosts. That's the way it splits the two.
Okay, right. It's taking away from Jerusalem and from Judah support and supply, all support of bread, all support of water. So what's the first thing there?
Sustenance.
What?
Sustenance?
Yeah, sustenance. The necessities of what?
Life.
Right. Right. Okay. And then after that, we get a new category. What is the new category? Starting in verse number 2 all the way down to verse number 4. What's that category?
There are men and soldiers.
Yeah, mighty men, soldiers, judge, prophet, diviner, elder, captain of 50, man of rank, counselor, skillful, expert. Okay, what do you have left when all that's removed from your society?
Women and children.
What?
Women and children.
Yeah, morons.
We can see.
I'm going to mess it up.
What a great thing.
That's why the children are
the
right. I'm trying to get a sense of what the Texas community. What's left when all that's removed?
Weakness.
Chaos.
Anarchy.
Right.
No leadership.
Right, which is what exactly when you just said no leadership, look at verse number 4. And I will make who princes?
Children.
Yeah. Boys. Children. And infants shall rule over them. Now, am I to understand an infant is ruling?
No.
Right. So this could be young in two senses. It could be young biologically, or how else could it be?
Immature.
Yeah, immature, no experience.
Yep.
Right.
Selfish.
What?
Foolish.
Selfish.
When I read this, I thought of C.S. Lewis, Men Without Chest.
Mm. Yeah.
And the idea that they have no hearty heart within them. That they may be a grown man, but they're actually a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't help but see our society. Because anytime you read, you got Corinthians, where Paul writes, all the things that happened to Israel were for example to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help but see my own government here.
Yeah.
That we're electing people because of celebrity status. Mm-hmm. We don't, like you said earlier, who has the guts to tell Congress the truth? You know, they might be grown men biologically, but they have the backbone of a child.
It happens in the church too, right? With like leadership that's, you know, not mature. And then verse 12, it says women rule over them, but we see that also in the church, just people that shouldn't be in that position.
So with this lack of leadership, with this lack of appropriate experts, there are no elders, there are no diviners, there's not a captain of 50, there's no men of rank, the counselors are gone, the experts are gone. Look at verse 5. What is the result of that? People will oppress one another, everyone his fellow, everyone his neighbor. The youth will be insolent to the elder, and the despised to the honorable.
So you cannot trust your leadership to take care of you and to do right.
Yep.
You are going to seek yourself first.
Sure.
Naturally.
Yep. People will oppress one another. Everyone is fellow. Everyone is neighbor.
And that's what happened after Jerusalem fell. When we spent half of Ezekiel reading about what was happening in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And this does sound like the first two reports.
Sounds like what?
The first two carrying away of Israel's people into Babylon.
Yeah, as I was reading this around 5 o'clock, I was eating my salad and just rereading it, I was wondering to myself, is this America?
Sure. That's what I said.
Yeah.
I mean, because I see youth and how many parents I talk to on a regular basis that look me dead in the eye, honest, really would love to know how to be parents and can't figure it out. How do I control my child? And the child is insolent. I mean, I've had them in my office where the teenager turns and tells the mom, be quiet, I'm talking. And I'm like, stop, we're not doing that. And the parent there doesn't even know how to engage it.
What about the camera incident, Jack?
She will.
What about the what?
We had a young lady yesterday break into our vending machine.
Yeah.
And without even, I guess she didn't think that our video cameras recorded or what have you, but turned and held the candy up to the camera and said, look, camera, I got it for free.
I think that might classify as insolent. I'm not sure, but I feel like that would be insolence. Yep. Yep. So then look at verse 6. So we want to keep this train of thought going. For a man will take a hold of his brother in the house of his father, saying, you have a cloak, you shall be our leader.
That's a qualification.
Right.
The lowbar.
Right.
You got pants?
Right.
You're our leader.
Yes. Right. You're wearing a jacket.
Then they're giving him a heap of ruins to rule over.
Yes.
Yeah, like stones.
But the cloak, going back like Joseph, would signalize some kind of position. So someone who looks like they have any, because there is no one left, someone who has any semblance of looking like they have some kind of leadership,
right.
They're begging people to be leaders, and they don't want to be leaders.
Right. You have a cloak, you shall be our leader. And this heap of ruins shall be under your rule.
That's a great pitch. But then he turns it
down. Yep, yeah. Right there.
Marlon's ahead of him.
Tell her to drink water. We're in the middle of a Bible study. My goodness. Just bring her in here.
I'm going.
All right.
I can bring her in.
I got it.
Yeah. Put her down on that chair back there. She can sleep it off.
Yeah, this happened in China, a lot of church, especially in house churches. For people, if they have money, they're rich, so you can be the leader. And you have doctor degree or master's degree, a PhD, and you will be the leader because you will have the right to speak. So, to me, I think that is all about.
Is it kind of similar to, and I don't remember exactly where it's at, but it was a priest, Micah, that was ministering to a smaller person. The next person came and said, looks like you'd be the next best person. They just...
Yep. Snatched him up. Yep. You okay? All right.
You also see the idea that those who could lead shirked that duty.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In the next verse.
Yeah, look at verse 7, everyone. Yeah. In that day he will speak out, saying, I will not be a healer. In my house there is neither bread nor cloak. You shall not make me a leader of the people. And how many times have you thought to yourself, is this the best candidate that we can come up with?
Right, exactly.
You know? Think about when you were looking at the Pennsylvania senator race.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and we had two candidates. You're like, this is the best that the state of Pennsylvania has to offer their people? Pick this one or that one? Mm-hmm. You know, C, neither. You know? Right.
I think the plan is just from now on we're going to write in Jack Farmer.
Just going to write him in. That's right. But aren't we all at a point where you say to yourself, I can't imagine running for office the way that the media would destroy you, you know?
Yeah, I'm
some people don't want anything to do with
it. Right.
Going back to the word earlier for cloak, I have just garment in Strong's, and if you use for a man or a woman, I thought it was interesting. It's something that typically somebody uses at night to wrap themselves. Then it's like, oh, you're sort of logical. It's cold outside. You're wrapping yourself with this. Now you're the leader of this heap of trash. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, or they still have something that they can wrap themselves with as opposed to somebody who doesn't have something.
It's crazy.
Because it's that poor of a scenario right there.
Yeah.
Right.
Was there like a break, though, between like we were talking about the end of the world and now we're back to like... See what I'm saying? Like, did we change...
Between 5 and 6.
No, between chapter 2 and chapter 3, like, it just feels kind of odd. We're, like, destroying the world, and now, like, is this in the same context? Or?
Yeah, this is the destruction, because there's
four people.
It's continuing. It's not, because it says Judah and Jerusalem, so it just makes me think, like, Old Testament Judah, but I guess this is future still, right? Sorry.
This is a description of God's judgment against a people who have forgotten their God.
In the future.
Then and in the future.
A dual application.
Yeah, because we just talked about this sounds much like both departments. Mm-hmm. I mean, why is Daniel carted off? Because he fits the category of either counsel, skillful magician, or expert in charms.
It could also be applied to the destruction of the temple.
Sure. Sure. There was a royal family, wasn't he?
Right.
Yeah, it was a prince.
Okay.
So,
but...
So verse 8, what is in verse 8?
An explanation for why this is happening.
Right, exactly. I underlined two words there in verse 8. What did you underline?
Stumble and fall. It's not the same.
Right. For Jerusalem has stumbled, Judah has fallen. Why?
Because they're speaking their themes.
Because they're against the Lord and deeds. Yeah. Right. I wrote down word and deed. Mm-hmm. Word and deed. That there's a clear expectation that we serve with both what we say and what we do. And when there is a disconnect between what we say and what we do, what is a person called?
Hypocrite.
You say one thing, and you do something else. Yeah.
And this can also be partly of the reason why the leaders don't want to take charge. That they have been just blasted for the current leadership, been blasted for the lack of leadership. And now it's like, I'm staying out of that mess.
I think it's really important that we see here that God's judgment is righteous. And it's righteous against the fact that this people are idolaters. Their speech and their deeds are against Yahweh. They defy his glorious presence. Look at verse 9. For the look on their faces bears witness against them. They proclaim their sin like Sodom. They do not hide it. I'll give you a parallel. So I'm trying to introduce to Autumn probably the best TV series ever created in the history of mankind. Of course, I'm talking about Andy Griffith. You know, she's learned Andy and she's learned Barney so far. And then the commercial comes on. And it's like one of the transgender... This is like TV land. You know, you're like, you're grabbing the remote to see how fast you can turn down the volume. And like, these are the transvestites, the parading themselves on some television show.
Like, normalizing.
Right, there's no place that it's, they don't even hide their sin. It's put right in front of you. It's as bold as, you know, do you not see it everywhere?
Everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Everywhere.
Right. Yeah, there's nothing sacred.
Oh, safe. And that's verse 11. Woe to the wicked, it shall be ill with them.
Yeah, I mean,
woe to the wicked.
They proclaim their sin like Sodom. Okay, how did Sodom proclaim their sin?
Bring out the man that we may know them.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, make sure that you remember this thing. Do we need to take a moment and dive back there to Genesis, or does everybody know? Crazy. They're pounding on the door.
We don't want your daughters, we want the man.
Right.
And even after the angel smote with blindness, they were still trying to get at the door.
Yes. It says they spent the night groping for the door. Yes.
Well, I was going to say, it's kind of interesting. When you start back at 2, and you see that they have these idols, and they begin to worship the creation instead of the creator. And then now you have this result. You go to Romans chapter 1, and it walks the same dog to eventually they're left to their own baseness. And they trade the natural use of a man and a woman for what is unnatural as a result of all of that, as the world begins to descend into chaos because of both of idolatry on the creation.
Let's just go ahead and go to Romans. That's worth reviewing how Paul lays this out.
Which chapter?
One.
Yeah, let's figure out where should we start reading
chapter 1.
Probably about, I think, verse 18.
Yeah. 18 is a good starting point. Yeah. We just read that the just shall live by faith. And then verse 18. Sean, why don't you read to like 25 and someone else can pick it up. Ryan, you can pick it up in the chapter.
For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because they may be known of God is manifest, or excuse me, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were they thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man, and birds, and four-footed animals, and creeping things. Therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness, and their lusts of their hearts, to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie, and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen.
For this reason, God gave them over to the great passions, for their women exchanged the natural function for that which is unnatural. And in the same way, also the men abandoned the natural function of the woman and burned in their desire towards one another, men with men committing indecent acts and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error. And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things which are not proper, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. And also they know the ordinance of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death. They not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them.
Chris, are we there?
You're talking to the guy that's got an MC and coordinate the Pride Month for the 82nd Airborne Division. We're there.
Yeah, we're there.
I took a complaint last week from him. And it was because the soldier was the female that has went to a male. I couldn't tell until they told me that the reason they were filing this complaint was because there was somebody in there calling them out, saying basically the same thing Paul was doing. This is against God. This is right. Going the full lane. And they're filing a complaint against them. And having took in these complaints for 4.5 years, it's going to be substantiated. That soldier that was calling them out based off scripture is going to have a substantiated formal EO complaint against them. It's probably going to ruin their career.
Yeah, he doesn't meet the Army values at that point, right? So we'll get a no on the block. What's interesting about it is that they're worshiping the creation. And like, I think of evolution, I think of all the other things, all these other excuses, and ultimately he gives them over to their own debased minds. And it's their, and through their actions, it is testifying against them that even against, like, they are, the things that they're doing, nature is testifying against you. A man and a man cannot have a child. A woman and a woman can't have a child. And so you're so far gone that everything that you're professing to be wise and smart about, it's actually just all a lie. You're like covering your own eyes. Nonsense.
Well, in this passage, God is actually passive. He's not actually judging. He's giving them up.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, in this case, it's almost like a creation norm. Like, that's how he created things to be. And because of that, it's almost as if their sin is going to destroy themselves,
mm-hmm,
and just let it take its own course.
Just God is that phrase, inventors of evil. That's exactly what that means.
One more time?
The inventors of evil.
Yeah, inventors of evil.
That's exactly what all of that is.
Yeah.
Verse 27 says, indecent acts and receiving their own persons, in their own persons, the due penalty of their error. Like, MacArthur comes out and says that's HIV, it's AIDS. Like, the Lord has his own ways of feeding you what you deserve.
Monkey virus, etc. So
I think it's also interesting in verse 30, the very last part of that is disobedient to parents, which is a parallel back to Isaiah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, the language is insolent. We have several parallels so far.
In verse 13 through 15 of Isaiah chapter 3, he goes back and even he gets to the point where he's like, you can do all this, we can do all this. I'm going to be in a position to be in control. And here's the sad reality of all of it. You did it to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you brought this on yourself. You know, y'all are talking about the transgenders and all these other things. I stumbled across a Jewish scientist recently who, with DNA, was looking at it, and see if I can remember this correctly. But the Jewish people assign a number to the alphabet,
mm-hmm,
for the letters. And the ones that make up Yahweh are 10, I think it's 10, 5, 6, 5. That's the exact sequence of binding agents that bind our DNA together in its parallel strands. There's, you have a 10 bridge between parallel strands, so many pairs, and then you go 10 pairs and have a bridge. You go 5 pairs, have a bridge. 6 pairs, have a bridge. 5 pairs, have a bridge. 10 pairs. So it's constantly, to those Jewish scientists, what he saw,
Yahweh
signed throughout our entire bodies.
Colossians, by him all things consist.
And then if they go and test our bodies after death, they're going to say that was a male bone, that was a female bone, no matter how it identified before it went into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, all of it to me was just this massive, it has to be a conscious massive rejection of God.
But they're also delineating between gender and identification. They're not even considering that the same thing. That they're one, but identifying as another.
Right. Because I think they can't.
One is their personal identity, the other is their sexual identity.
Yeah, I know. You can't get past the DNA. Mm-hmm. So that's why they have to do that. Mm-hmm. Professing themselves to be wise.
Yeah.
The Department of Defense, with the new regulation coming out, will put gender identity as a new factor of discrimination.
Hmm.
Yeah, but how does it work in the medical field? Because you can't look at an x-ray of a male and female the same way. You know, if you're looking at certain body parts, you have to identify issues. You know, it doesn't matter. If I go for my lungs, they'll ask me, you know, things that happen every month. They're not going to ask that a man because it does not have an impact on it. It's absolutely absurd.
But we're still supposed to play along. I called a patient by her dead name because it was literally her legal name. And her dad, like, gave me a piece of his mind about it. This was, like, just a couple days ago.
What'd you call it? Dead name?
Her dead... that was what he called it. Her dead name, because her name is Max.
Yeah, that's what they call the name on their birth certificate.
But like our computer system doesn't know that. Like, our computer system's gonna send her real name, her legal name, until that's changed legally. And you know what I mean? Like you're saying, like I have to. She's anatomically a female. It was so uncomfortable. I was just like,
dead name.
Yeah.
At the hospital, the previous hospital we were at in Fort Benning, the OB department needed volunteers, and several transgender women to the OB department. I mean, really? What are you going to do there? You know, for their residents, we have many friends in there, and they said, you're completely useless. You don't have the body parts that would need the residents to study.
It's insane. And like, as funny and stupid as it is, like, at the same time, this ideology just shot your friend's kid. You know what I'm saying? And like, how do we handle that, like, as Christians, if we're supposed to just, like, I'm always, like, hearing the, like, turn the other cheek stuff, and, like, well, you're going to be persecuted stuff, and, like, okay, but also, like, we have to defend our children, and we, like, how do we, like, I don't even know how to ask this question. I've been, like, thinking about it.
For example, as a parent, I took a decision when I got pregnant, we are not going to have a TV in our house, because I don't want those commercials to pop up. If we watch anything, it's going to be created in such a way that there's no commercials inserted. But we walked downtown Fayetteville after we moved here, and the boys got so excited that they saw the symbol of the rainbow all over the downtown, and they said, look, they have it everywhere. They're talking about God, and we had to explain to them, that's not what it means. Evil people stole that symbol, and it means something else, and that's what... They're boasting their sinfulness.
And I appreciate, like, protecting them mentally, but I'm literally talking about physical protection. Like, I'm talking about, like how do we handle that on, like a literal physical sense as far as our churches and our schools and our
I still take them with me
family.
To the female bathroom. If we're together, they don't go alone to a male bathroom. They go with me.
And when will that stop, Mom?
When they can defend themselves. And I told them, they asked me why, and I said there are evil people who will come in the bathroom after you, and I didn't tell them exactly what happens, but I said they might try to hurt you while you have your pants down, and you're going to try to run, and I said, are you going to be able to run if your pants are down? And he said, no. I said, okay, then you're going to come with Mommy to the bathroom.
So what about mom when they just feel totally uncomfortable being in a woman's bathroom? Because they're on that age.
Yeah. Well, see, in Europe, they have bathrooms that can be used for either, but you can lock the door. Mm-hmm. It's just one bathroom and you can lock it.
Yeah.
So that's not an issue. But sure. Here it is, because there's so much distance underneath the stall. We just won't go to public places now.
But, like, we can't just stop living our lives, too. Yeah. Like, we can't just, like, hide.
But remember what happened to Dinah.
And there's a thing that...
Remember what happened to Dinah.
There's a thing that concerns me. I've lived with the kids a little bit older. I didn't really think anything about it. There was maybe some news, or maybe we warned them about things, we talk about certain things, and it's happening a lot, but especially with social media, kids can see a lot of things out there. I'm not just talking about the things we talk to on PC, talking about the threats that are out there. And as a little kid, I don't think a lot of us dealt with those kind of pressures, those kind of concerns of, like, somebody might come in my school and shoot me, somebody might hurt me in the bathroom, how bad these things are. And so it's not an easy answer to answer.
And it's specifically targeting Christianity. Like, we spend all this time in America talking about, like, minorities and, like, people of different sexual orientations, and they're all persecuted. Christians are being persecuted. Yeah. They're coming after Christians because their lifestyle is the complete and total opposite of what we believe and stand for. And they hate us. And that's not going to be the last time we see that.
As a whole, hate manifests itself in many ways. This is, unless I'm wrong, Jack, this is, other than the Amish shooting, this is, I think, the first Christian school shooting
that I know of.
And so a lot of them have been hate of every stripe.
Mm-hmm.
And so while we might protect one, it's hate manifested in many different ways for many different agendas.
And my point about it, I was trying to say, was that I think it's kind of complicated, because I think you have to look at it on both sides. How do I protect my children, but also how do I inform them at the same time without putting this kind of, like, anxiety and fear into them?
Yeah.
And it is something that's not easy to answer, for sure.
That's the reason why childhood resilience is low.
Yeah.
You made them perfect.
If it was easy, Jesus would not have said, take up your cross and follow me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is your, like, kind of knee-jerk to that, all of that stuff, though, like, the turn-your-cheek mentality, like, the... Or have we applied... Have we over-applied that as Christians? Have we applied that, inappropriately to, like... So that we are just constantly just getting kicked around by everything in society?
Do you feel kicked around?
Not me personally, but I'm sure that family does.
Which family?
The family that just lost their kid the other day.
Yeah, but they joined the ranks of... families all across the United States, in Connecticut, Texas, et cetera, et cetera. I mean,
you don't think that everything in our culture right now, though, is specifically against Christianity, like, as a very specific?
I think we'd have to go to North Korea and talk to somebody over there to get a sense of what it's.
I'm not saying it can't get worse. I'm just saying, like, how do we respond to it?
I think we have to realize the fact that Christianity is shifting and has been for the last 100 years away from what it has been since Constantine became a Christian and it became the religion of the West and the religion of the empire and the religion of the state. And you can look at Christian history and see a significant shift when that happened, and now that we're shifting back away from that, it's going to become a lot harder for Christians, and we have to prepare for that. And that means that Christians are going to be targeted, and Christians have been targeted for 100 years, and maybe not in America, maybe we have seen that now, but I mean, we saw that over the last decade with the ISIS targeting Christians. We've seen that in the Soviet Union, we've seen it in North Korea. So we just have to wake up to the fact that it's here in America now, and so we have to look to Christians around the world and see how they dealt with it. The way they deal with it is they're praying more, and they're sharing the gospel more, and they're doing what Christians are called to do. So I don't think we're over, I forget what you said, but I don't think we're oversharing. I don't think we're being Christians too much, and that people are reacting to it. I think it's a failure to do that.
Well, Solomon says there's nothing new under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been this way. Go back to the Roman times. Far worse.
Yeah, it was said that it was an incredibly rare occurrence that a boy turned 16 years of age and had not been with a man as a rite of passage to manhood. the Greek army a battle buddy meant a lot more than just a guy who watched your six.
Japanese culture was very normal.
Insanely perverted. I think you have every responsibility to protect your children, right? To the nth degree, while somehow simultaneously turning the cheek as a follower of Christ in the world that we live in.
I think what's difficult is like everything that we've been used to for so long in America is now changing.
Yep.
And I agree with everything you say, but I think you hit the nail right on the head. The difficult thing, though, is we've been used to what has been for so long, and now that it's changing, that creates that reaction. Like, what do we do? What do we do? And, I'm in the same boat. Obviously, we all are.
Well, some of the things that we do according to the Word of God is that we assemble more, not less. Mm-hmm. Right? As you see the day approaching. Right. You know, so what's going to happen is, I mean, COVID did it and it's going to continue doing is the wheat are being separated from the chaff.
Yep.
And the true church is becoming more identified as, because the cultural norms of being part of the church in order to get the benefits are gone.
Right.
You can be a very successful salesperson in the city of Fayetteville with or without Christianity. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't need church connections to be a good general contractor right now or to have the best restaurant or whatever the case may be. You don't need it. So the church now becomes much more a true church. And I say the church, I mean true churches. I mean, we recognize there's still Aquana clubs that meet on Sundays under the guise of something else. With boys leading and women leading, etc. But the true church is becoming more and more the true church.
We see that with denominations realigning as well.
Absolutely. Right, absolutely. And even within the denominations, every denomination has people that are speaking out against the denominational alignments and trying to call the denomination to repentance and all that.
Methodist church right now.
Sure. Yeah. Anglican church.
Baptist conference, you're seeing it split.
Anglican church, same way. Church of England, same struggle. I mean, it's you have to decide for yourself. I'm a follower of Christ. Done. Full stop. I am a follower of Christ. I don't decide every day if I'm a follower of Christ. I am a follower of Christ. And it manifests itself in two kind of paradoxical ways, which is I take huge stands that are biblical, and I am seeking to be the most gracious person I can be in a world of sinners.
I think that's the struggle, is that it's really paradoxical. Like, you're really trying to do two very different things. Like, I'm going to carry a handgun and protect my children, but I'm also like trying to be kind of loving to Max at work. Like, I mean, not that I would not have been kind to Max, but I'm just saying, like, Max's name is Scarlett. And, like, I don't want to lie. And I don't want to, like, agree with this nonsense. You know what I mean? And, like, I don't know. It just, it really hit me this week because that happened and then this happened. And I was like, how am I supposed to deal with this, like, in a practical sense? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, in a practical sense, you're supposed to prefer one another.
Supposed to?
Prefer. Defer to somebody. Right? Prefer them. Right. Mm-hmm. So if I came up to you and I said, hey, man, please call me Pastor Son, and you said, okay, Mr. Harris, that would sound very insolent. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I would just tell you, I think it's the same thing. If someone says, I prefer Max, then from that point forward, in deference to what they just said, you're Max. Doesn't mean that I'm compromising my understanding of what gender is and sexual identity. Doesn't mean I've thrown the towel into everything that I know to be true. Doesn't mean that I'm now a compromiser. But it also is a respecter of this person in front of me, this image bearer of God. And how can I expect them to give me an opportunity to speak the love of Christ into their lives if I've created a wall with them just by the fact that I won't refer to them by whatever name that they're asking to be referred to? Like, if you had a nickname that you preferred, let's say that your given name, your birth name, was one that you just despised. Let's pick some obnoxious, what would be a ridiculous you know.
He was Clyde.
Clyde, right, yeah, we, you know. Yeah, and you just never understood why your parents called you Clyde. You know, so you like Junior better. All right, Clyde. Well, everyone would understand that that's a smack in your face. Go ahead,
but I think it's also hard because you went off the name that was on the folder that, or the case that you were
right,
handed.
Right,
so
right.
You said Scarlett, and then the father went
right.
Ridiculous. And
yeah.
That's, I think you're right to feel kind of like, oh, I said the name that I was given, and then who was I to know?
Right, and when the father goes ridiculous,
yeah.
You're now being given an opportunity by the Holy Spirit to be sanctified. And how will you deal at that moment? Will you attempt to vindicate yourself? Because that's not sanctification when I'm vindicating myself. Or will I show the love of Christ when someone's going off on me? I mean, this is hard stuff. This is not like entry-level Christianity 101. All right, we're at graduate level Christianity right here. We're pursuing our advanced degree, which is I want to be able to show the love of Christ when someone's going off on me.
Okay. All right, but like if somebody tells me like my pronouns are they and them, if I refer to you in that sense, like that to me, it feels like I'm being dishonest. I know like they're like Max, fine, we'll call you Max, but like there's a point at which it really kind of feels like dishonest because I feel like I'm agreeing with their like lie about.
Sometimes when you don't know, you just say you.
I just said Max. Every time I would have used the pronoun, I said Max. But I'm just saying, like, this is just, I don't know. Like,
yeah, and for yourself at that moment, if you're saying that I refuse to compromise by using a pronoun that doesn't identify their gender, then be faithful to the commitment that you made. Because that in and of itself is not off-putting to choose to use the proper noun instead of the pronoun. There's nothing off-putting about that, right? So be faithful to yourself in that sense. You know, that's perfectly fine.
You can just tell the person in the truth and say, I don't feel comfortable to call you because this is for the honesty of the
But everyone doesn't have that opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay? If you're a commanding officer on Fort Bragg, under this new guidance, when they get their gender transition occurred on their official form, you don't get to say to them, I don't feel that. You have to follow it. Or go ahead and get ready to get kicked out. Go ahead and resign your commission. And if you want to do that, then I totally respect that. Go ahead, resign your commission. But if you say, no, I want to remain in the DOD so that I can continue to be salt and light in this dark world, then you're going to have to work within the parameters that, you know, Jesus said, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. In other words, there are earthly authorities that we are making a commitment to operate in. You know, Nate, you recognize going into the entity that you're going into that there may be times that I have to do this instead of this. That's the reality. Go ahead, Sean.
I had a teammate, female. She one day came out and to me and was like, hey, I just want you to know, because I was her team leader, team sergeant. She was like, I want you to know that I'm married to a woman. I'm a lesbian. And I was like, is that what this conversation's about? Is that why you wanted to talk to me? And she's like, well, I didn't know that you're a Christian. I thought that, well, I was like, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about you serving in the military? What I expect from you is to be a good soldier and do this and this and this. I'm not here to talk to you about that stuff. If you're asking me what I personally believe, I don't agree with your lifestyle. That's not my job here. My job is to treat you like a teammate, love you like a teammate, and we're teammates. And you're doing an awesome job. But if you want to have a different conversation, we can. But that's not what we're here to talk about. And I try to navigate that. It was a little bit easier. That was a couple of years ago. But at some point, I just try to follow the Holy Spirit that's calling to me as I'm going through this situation, because not I can't apply the same thing to every single one.
We the evangelical church of the last 50 years, greater than that, going back to the 60s, we need to own the fact that we are now judgmental on something that we were giving people a buy on 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's okay if the choir director goes into an adulterous relationship with the piano player as long as they're both happy. And we gave people a buy on that on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So now that it's homosexuality or some variant of that, instead of that which is we understood, we've now really become appalled. But we gave away our credibility. We threw our credibility away when we weren't consistent on identifying all forms of sexual immorality as sin. Mm-hmm. We handed it away.
Oh, we get the truth.
Mm-hmm. Sure we did. Right. I mean, preachers would have adulterous relationships, relocate to another town, put the sign up, First Baptist Church, start a church there, do the same thing, go to a third town, do it again. Literally over a lifetime of 50 years of ministry, do it two or three times. And preach the gospel at every place and have people following them.
Sometimes they didn't even have to move.
Sure. Yep. Craziness.
There's a lot of I repent.
Right.
Okay, well, you can stay.
Yep. All right, we're dismissed.